Okay, here we go. Hours number 2 and 3 coming your way. We're going to bring you a lot of information, some of it by way of recap, some of it brand new that you need to keep in mind. And remember, speaking of minds, most people can't remember things. And that's not to put anybody down. The human mind just doesn't readily access most things that it wants to remember. It's like 95% gone in 5 days, 50% gone overnight. So when you come to a point where you can repeat something, I always believe it to be a worthy endeavor because people just don't hang on to things. And in this day and age, with the tsunami of information, how could we? Any of us, myself included. There's so much going on. We're going to jump into a lot of different things that are fascinating. I was on the phone today with some health professionals in Florida, and I've got some very interesting updates and news from them. There's a lot ahead. So sit down and open your ears, open your mind, and take notes if you want to. Much of this is up, of course, on the right side of the homepage in the archives section. You'll see it. Look for the big colored picture of an alleged coronavirus, and you'll find all the stories that you need. They're all right there. Erica Kahn is back with us tonight to spend 2 hours helping to analyze some of this with her insights, MIT microbiologist, who has contributed a great deal to this whole process and who, frankly, is, I haven't seen anyone who was at her level of advanced research. I mean, we all know the media doctors. They're all good. They're excellent. They're putting out great information. But we here have tried to push the envelope as far as we can with logic and pragmatic analyses. And I think we've done very well, and we're going to continue doing that. That's the way we play it. Erica, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Oh, good evening, Jeff. Nice to be back. Thanks.
Nice of you to say good evening. Listen, they're tough. Every evening is tough now, and I know a lot of people out there feel the same way. I go out and I look like you do and like many of you listening do, and some of you are in other countries, and you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing people who just don't seem to have much life in their faces anymore. It's sad. But it's there. It's true. I know you see the same thing, right?
Oh, yeah. The people's behavior is markedly different from a year ago or 18 months ago. It's hard to know what to make of it.
Sometimes just a few months ago, depending on when they got their vax. And we can go back to that thing that we have talked about a great deal, and that is once you have been injected, how do they phrase it? You lose the ability to understand that you've been changed. Isn't something very close to
words,
that?
Yeah, but in the words of Anthony Patch, he said that the moment that you are injected, you lose the awareness that something has happened to you, that you've lost a sense of will.
Self.
Your own will.
Sense of self, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. I may play that Patch little video later. That's an essential view, and most of you have heard it, but again, it's always good to revisit. Here's a little quickie I just found. 2 minutes. Very interesting with Dr. Byram Bridle, Laura Ingraham program. This is just 2 minutes long. I don't think many of you heard this. I hadn't. So let's take a quick listen. This is all about trying to blame the unvaccinated for the feared variants. So here we go.
University of Guelph, who has been researching the COVID vaccine. Doctor, thank you for joining us in part two of this interview with you. Is it accurate to now call this a pandemic of the unvaccinated? Or do you think those who are vaccinated could also be contributing to the emergence of these new variants?
Hi, Laura. Thanks for having me back. Absolutely, it's untrue to be calling this a pandemic of the unvaccinated. In fact, I would argue that, and it's certainly untrue, that this flipping of the messaging to scare people into thinking that the unvaccinated are somehow driving the emergence of novel variants. This goes against every scientific principle that we understand. The reality is the nature of the vaccines that we are using right now and the way we are rolling them out are going to be applying the selective pressure to this virus to promote the emergence of new variants. Again, this is based on sound principles. We have to look no further than chemotherapy for cancers and the emergence of antibiotic-resistant strains of bacteria. The principles are this. If you have a biological entity that's prone to mutation, and the SARS coronavirus 2, like all coronaviruses, is prone to mutation. So if you have a biological entity like that, and you apply a narrowly focused selective pressure that is non-lethal, and you do this over a long period of time, this is the recipe for driving the emergence of novel variants. And that's exactly what we're doing. Our vaccines are focused on a single protein of the virus, so the virus only has to alter one protein, and the vaccines don't come close to conferring sterilizing immunity. People who are vaccinated still get infected. It only seems to be particularly good at blunting the disease. And so what that tells you, therefore, is that these vaccines in the vast majority of people are applying a non-lethal pressure, narrowly focused on one protein. And of course, the vaccine rollout is occurring over a long period of time. That's the recipe for driving.
So that's driving
novel
variants. The variants. So it's exact.
Absolutely.
Your theory is that it's the exact opposite of what they're saying.
The exact opposite of what they're saying. It's really an obscenity to watch them try to turn this around to blame the unvaccinated people for these so-called fierce variants. Any comment on that? That's a new statement. I hadn't heard that one before.
I predicted that that's exactly how they were going to play this, because this entire scenario was predictable. I mean, the nature of the vaccine, it's a leaky vaccine. In other words, it does not protect against infection. You can still acquire the virus, and it can still replicate, and you can still spread it. You just don't have symptoms, which makes it even more insidious in some respects.
Right.
And you know, it's the same concept of you know, bacteria becoming resistant to an antibiotic. There's some that escape or mutate fast enough to avoid the killing of the antibiotic, and they become resistant to it. And because they multiply so quickly, it doesn't take long for that to happen. And we're seeing the same thing with this virus.
Well, whatever kind of virus it is, and I still think that's open to a very major debate. What the hell is it? Is it a whole virus? Is it a piece of a virus that was carefully constructed and then let loose, which is really nothing much more than the cold or the flu? And since we had no flu last year, I think what we've pretty well pointed to on this program in the past is that all the people who allegedly died of COVID last year, many of them died of flu, cold, but many more of them died in all likelihood of remdesivir, which we made a very clear case for. In other words, I hate to say it, but those people were literally killed, murdered in their beds with the pharmacology that was given to them to supposedly make them better. This was a true Holocaust, and I don't see any other word to hang on it.
No. You know, the fact is we don't even know what these people who are sick right now are truly suffering from. Is it COVID? Is it the coronavirus? Or is it something else? I mean, these symptoms could be attributed to any number of different viruses.
Right.
And you can't make this diagnosis on this joke of a PCR test.
And they're still using it, even though the CDC has pronounced the PCR test essentially invalid. Let's just be polite. Well, no, it's worthless. All right. And that's what Dr. Carrie Mullis, Nobel Prize winner, who created the PCR test, said in at least two interviews before he conveniently died about 3 months before this whole thing rolled out.
Yep.
Carrie would have derailed the whole thing. He said it is not suitable as a test to determine clinical infection of anything. It's not that kind of a test. Now, I talked to... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say you're absolutely right, and every virologist worth his salt has said the same thing. You know, it's completely inappropriate for diagnosing infection. It can be used maybe as a confirmatory, you know, in the presence of other clinical symptoms, and maybe an antibody test or serology test or isolation of a protein, but not on its own, and especially in the absence of symptoms. That's ridiculous.
All right. Now, here's what we have. Now, and I will not name names here. I never do. And I do get some wonderful calls from people who are health professionals, doctors, nurses, technicians, and so forth. And I was on the phone today. These people are working in the East. Let me just leave it at that. There are senior living facilities involved, senior care centers, homes for older people, 60 and up. All right. These are involved. One of the doctors works at an emergency urgent care facility, as well as taking care of our seniors who are in these homes to get good care. What's happening is they're beginning to drop dead. Many of them have been vaxxed, double vaxxed, they're so-called fully vaxxed, 3 to 4 months ago. Let's say their second shot was about 3 months ago. That's pretty much an average. But these people, these seniors, in these senior residential centers are literally, according to the people I talked to today, dropping dead. No symptoms. And I asked, again, are there any respiratory issues at all? Coughing, sneezing, any pulmonary issues that they're complaining about? No. No symptoms. They're dying from complete system shutdown. They get very tired. They begin sitting around. And I know one nurse told me that some of them have a kind of an empty gaze in their eyes when they're not talking. They're just sort of staring off into nowhere. And she said she could look into their eyes and almost see right through them, so to speak. This is bad. No symptoms, as you just said.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I mean, it's almost as if they're just fading away.
Fading away.
The narcolepsy, which is a strong urge just to fall asleep, and cataplexy were both listed as possible outcomes or adverse reactions to the vax back in October before the rollout when the FDA was putting their paperwork together, their documentation,
right,
as to what the possible side effects might be. That is listed. But, you know, it seems to be obviously if they're dying shortly thereafter, they're just shutting down.
And no autopsies, so we don't know. Now, we did have an autopsy performed, what was it, a couple of weeks ago now? I don't remember. Tell our listeners what that autopsy of an older male who died. Tell our listeners what happened.
Right. This was a study that was published that came out of Germany a couple months ago. And it was an 86-year-old gentleman that was in a nursing home. He got his first dose of Pfizer and began getting sick within days and ended up in a hospital and continued to deteriorate and died approximately 2 to 3 weeks later. He was apparently, during his hospital stay, exposed to a patient roommate that tested positive for COVID. So whether or not that contributed to this failing man's demise is open to conjecture. But at any rate, they did take an opportunity to autopsy his body. And of all the vital organs that they sampled, I believe there were 8. All but the liver and the olfactory bulb, which would be his nasal cavity, tested positive for the virus, presumably the spike protein. Saturated. I mean, the cause of death was put down as pneumonia and kidney failure.
What would you put the cause of death down as, knowing what we know now? Drowned in toxic poison spike proteins.
Yeah, these vaccines are, you know, toxic on many, many levels. And to expect an elderly person to, you know, generate an immune response or produce the proteins that would enable the body to produce an immune response, and on top of that, deal with the toxic lipid nanoparticles, and now we know there's graphene in these things.
Here's a man, and there's so many. God knows how many have been vaxxed now. And their bodies have been reconfigured genetically to produce spike proteins, the body cells. That's all they produce. So that's all their immune system sees. It's overwhelming to the immune system. So the immune system mounts this incredible response until it begins to wear itself out. Remember, it's predicated on bone marrow, which is predicated on diet, on nutrition, and a lot of things. So the immune system, in my view, has been targeted for elimination and diminution from the beginning, and it begins to fade. And I think that fits in with your use of the word fading. These older people who are just dropping dead, I think their immune systems have essentially failed them. And then it's just a matter of time.
Yeah, I would agree that it's a huge stress on the immune system. But I also, in my mind, I think there's an issue with the bone marrow. I think the stem cells are not regenerating. The blood cells are not regenerating. You know, if they are producing proteins, you know, whatever cells have been transfected with this foreign genetic material, those organs or tissues are now producing proteins that, well, they're not producing the proteins they're supposed to be producing. So there's going to be consequences to that, and then they may be producing so many of these foreign proteins that they're ending up as deposits, as they did in this autopsy person.
Right.
Yeah, in vital organs that just cause it to malfunction in that way.
Right.
I mean, everything about this strategy of it's almost laughable.
Well, when you think about the sophistication of it and the multiple layers of it, it is black humor. It is really evil stuff. They didn't mess around. They knew exactly what they were doing. And this has, it's like it has, what is it? I don't know how many heads a Hydra has on it. The many-headed Hydra. That's what it reminds me of. If it doesn't get you one way, it's going to get you another. And there are ways that are being actually perpetrated in the body now because of these vaccines that aren't even known about. I think they're putting nanotech in there that we don't have a clue about. Because if you read the patents, everyone, and they're on the site, and you read them carefully, you'll see that the ingredients are listed as, quote, including but not limited to. That's the phrase, including but not limited to, colon, and then they list a bunch of ingredients. So what that says, not limited to, means they can change their formula anytime they want. That's how they got the patent. It's written in such a way that this is wide open. So guinea pig doesn't even come close. Lab rat, we're that and more. It's really something. Back to my friends in the East, or acquaintances. They're wonderful people. All the health professionals who I've spoken to are extremely dedicated. They really care about their patients. They don't know what these people are dying of. They don't know what these older people are dying of. They're just falling over, basically dead. They're fading away in a matter of hours, minutes, I don't know. It's a very quick process, though, and they're gone. Now, here's another angle. If they test, and I think I've got my notes right. If I didn't, forgive me if you're all listening down there who I talk to. But I think it's if they test positive for COVID, they cannot be, according to the CDC, retested for 90 days. Now, you might say to yourself, and you should, what the hell is that about? Why can't they retest? Well, let's take it from step one. First of all, what are they using to test? I was told they're using a nasal swab. Well, a nasal swab ends up being a PCR test, which throws a 95% false positive. It's a useless test. So they test someone and they get a false positive 95% of the time, and they're not allowed to be retested, according to CDC rules, for 90 days. Think about that. Think about that. That's crazy. And another angle, they all seem to be suffering from multi-organ system inflammation. Now, that's a big one. Tell us more about that, Erica.
Well, that's just when all of your organs become inflamed. And of course, you know, when they're inflamed, they don't work as they're supposed to work. It's a huge stress on the system. And quite often it can lead to sepsis, where you're just poisoned to death by your own body. And it's very hard to bring somebody that's going into sepsis out of sepsis.
Wow. Yeah. So that's just a little quick insight into one group of health professionals dealing with emergency cases and seniors and senior living facilities. It's a disgrace, and it's not being covered at all in the media. Nothing. Nothing's being said about these people. These people were fine until they got their vaccines, and now they're different. And how many times are we beginning to hear more and more stories about people changing? We've spoken about it a little bit already tonight. People are changing. We're going to go through the break, Todd. Thank you very much. When people change, what are you hearing about the kinds of change that friends and relations and loved ones are seeing? You monitor the social media as part of your medical retinue, so what are you hearing? What kinds of changes?
I have heard some of the cataplexy type of things where somebody, I mean, it's, think about being catatonic. You're just kind of sitting, staring off, not really engaged in the world. I've heard several reports of that. You know, personally, the people I've interacted with that I know have had the vax, they do seem almost giddy at times, you know, unusually, inappropriately, unnecessarily giddy.
Kind of like me. I get it. I have heard the same thing. They're either overly happy, almost inappropriately so, or they're gruff and angry and
yeah,
and,
that's
and
another
down.
Group that they seem easily flustered, easily frazzled, just for no apparent reason. Very, very curt and short tempered. And of
I
course,
have another,
you know, the ever present road rage that just, you know, if you just
all
sit
right.
and watch people drive,
exactly,
you know, in a busy area, it's astonishing what you see these days.
California Highway Patrol reports more than double citations this year compared to last year for people driving over 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
In California. Now, I have another friend who gives me reports from time to time, a businessman back east, and he said that he's noticed people are different in their behaviors since they've been vaxxed. And one of the big differences, and this is really interesting, is these people love to play golf. They go out and play golf 3-4 times a week. And one of his acquaintances who goes golfing with them said that they're now forgetting where they just hit the ball. They're losing their golf ball. They can't find it. He remembers where it went, but their short-term memory is fading quickly. They're in a brain fog or a haze, and they can't find their golf ball anymore. There's another
wow.
aspect. So this thing is cutting across the entire culture, this thing being the change in behavior and mental acuity of people who have been vaxxed. It's really something.
Yeah. Yep.
Now this brings up another thing that is called ADE. And when I hear things like multi-organ system inflammation, I think right away about teenagers getting vaxxed and ending up with an inflamed heart. That's one organ. Multi-organ is far worse. But what is an inflamed organ in the body? And what is multi-organ inflammation? What does that trigger? I mean, are we talking ADE here? Is that a possibility? In some cases,
it's more like a cytokine storm. I mean, this can happen without the ADE. The ADE usually comes after you've created the antibodies and upon a subsequent infection. So
okay.
if you get injected with these vaccines, they want you to produce, you're supposed to produce antibodies, which are supposed to be helpful. And in many viral diseases, yes, they're helpful. But in a few, such as coronavirus, they're actually detrimental. They will actually, on a subsequent infection, enable the virus to go further and wider into the body than it normally would, like to distant organs. And then that's when you get this multi-system inflammatory syndrome, or ADE, antibody-dependent enhancement, where the antibodies are not helpful. They're actually contributing to the disease. They're making the disease infinitely worse than it would be if you didn't have them.
And they could lead to death.
So I don't know how much of that we're seeing right now. It could be. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's every other coronavirus vaccine that they tried to come up with in the past 18 years always produced that same result. And that's why the animals died.
This goes back to SARS-1 20 years ago.
Yep.
The medical professionals I talked to back east today said, I asked them, I said, well, what are these people, these older people, 60 and up, and I don't consider 60 old at all, what are they dying from? And the one doctor said, we don't know. I asked a nurse, we don't know. They're dying. We're losing them. They're fading away and dying. We cannot do autopsies. They're forbidden. So how are any of us going to find out from the professionals? These professionals are very frustrated, and they are pouring themselves into trying to help do something to reverse this. And when they don't have the support of scientific autopsy, it makes their jobs almost impossible. I would say virtually impossible.
Yeah, it's criminal. I mean, obviously they don't want to, I don't know, anybody to learn from this. God forbid we help.
Yeah. All right, we've got something called the bystander effect, right? That's an interesting term. Tell us more about the bystander effect, where that came from and where it is in terms of its applicability to what's happening now, the bystander effect.
In molecular biology, the bystander effect is when you've got a group of cells that have been sustained some kind of a damage, and it was first noted in radiation, those cells become damaged, and yet cells nearby or even distantly that were not exposed to the radiation exhibit the same type of damage. And how that happens, it's not quite clear, but there's obviously extracellular communication molecules that signal to cells throughout the body that some damage has occurred, and maybe they should upregulate their defenses in case they too are exposed to the same insult. It's some kind of a quantum effect where it's a frequency. These cells are damaged, and like a domino effect, they damage distant cells as well. Now, the reverse can happen, too. If you put healthy cells next to damaged cells, it can sometimes cause the damaged cells to revert to normal cells.
That's fascinating. That is very interesting. Now, we're not talking about direct shedding at this point of, let's just say, spike protein, although I think most all of us listening would agree that there may well be other things involved, such as the mRNA itself, spike protein, and probably nanomachines, nanobots that are in the so-called vaccine. I hate to even use that term, but that's what the word is. So they're getting injected, people. Lots of them, with things that aren't even in the patents. They don't have to be in the patents by virtue of the way the patents are written. Think about that. They don't have to literally, legally put what they're injecting into people in the patent. They just leave it, contain the following, but not limited to. Not limited to. There you go. So it's wide open crazy. Now, what you said is very interesting to me, because many years ago, I studied a group of Soviet Russian scientists' experimentations on human cellular transmission of information from cell to cell. And what they did was, and this is called the Kuznetsov experiments. Don't ask me to spell it. I used to be able to. I can't anymore. The Kuznetsov experiments involve taking a healthy piece of tissue from somebody, dividing it in half, putting one half in one petri dish and the other half in another petri dish, and then putting between the two petri dishes a 1-inch thick piece of crystal. All right? No transmission could happen. No air moved. These were, it was like built in a box. So you had healthy tissue, healthy tissue. One of the pieces of healthy tissue was then contaminated with a bacterium that overwhelmed it and sent it into a death spiral. The other healthy tissue on the other side of the 1-inch thick piece of quartz glass developed the exact same bacterial infection and died as well. Now, that can only be expressed by one mechanism, and that's what the Russians said. They called it the death photon. In other words, when tissue is dying, or maybe even seriously ill, it sends out photons with a message. I'm dying of this, that, or the other thing. And in the case of the Kuznetsov work, one tissue got a specific bacteria, and the other tissue on the other side of the 1-inch thick piece of quartz glass developed the same exact bacterial strain and died. That is phenomenal. That suggests, like you just said, some kind of frequency or photonic subatomic transmission. It's open.
Yeah, it's there's definitely a vibrational communication happening. And it seems, you know, there does not have to be proximity. I mean, they don't have to be touching each other. This can happen, well, if you really get into this, you know it can happen on the other side of the world. You know, it's a vibrational match.
That's quite true. Now, let's go back to the bystander effect in terms of shedding, all right? This is what we've been talking about for months now on the program. When it first became known that people who were not vaxxed were beginning to manifest similar, if not duplicate, forms of discomfort, shall we say, disorders in their bodies. Let me read this and then ask Erica to give us her two cents and analyze it. These came from social media. I'm going to read through these. They're not proofread, so there's some words that are out of place and so forth, but you'll get the idea. Because the vaccine's spike protein causes blood clots, and boy do we know that now, strokes, heart attacks, among other deadly conditions, and you don't even have to have the vaccine, you can get clots. You can get clots from shedding from others who have been vaccinated. I have personally been experiencing blood clots. I am not vaccinated. I can feel the ones that go through my heart. She feels it in her heart, or he. It has been excruciatingly painful. The pain stops you from breathing, and your heart can't beat until the clot passes through the artery, if it does at all. Some of the smaller clots are less painful, but the large one I experienced yesterday was excruciating and frightening. And this person, male or female, has not been vaxxed, but he or she has been around vaccinated people. And somebody asked, have you had the jab? No, and I didn't take the concepts of shedding seriously until I started experiencing very frightening side effects. I actually didn't believe it and thought people were crazy even talking about it. The vaccine is known to trigger shingles, herpes. My first experience was the very first visible shingles after coming in contact with vaccinated people. In the beginning of the vaccine rollout, when masses were getting vaccinated, it was the first time I had come into contact with vaccinated people. And within 2 days of contact, I experienced shingles. After that experience, I could no longer deny it. And now I've been experiencing severe chest pains right when I wake up. I've never had these issues before, never had chest pain before. There are doctors who know people who are getting micro blood clots after being vaccinated. These micro blood clots are mostly unnoticeable until a large one causes a stroke or a heart attack. And we've talked a lot about these micro clots. Erica?
Yeah, that's very worrisome. I am seeing more reports of that now that it's somewhat known and being reported. People are taking note and realizing that it's happening to them. I think that makes a case for taking precautions if you're forced to be in the presence of vaxxed people for any period of time.
Especially in an office setting or even a medical setting. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, think about ways to protect yourself. I don't know how much of this is exacerbated by EMFs, and that's something that is not being talked about enough. I think that is a major player in a lot of these symptoms that people are experiencing, or whether or not you are affected by either the vax, but bystander effects, is that you have to be cognizant of your Wi-Fi exposure. Because, you know, they're amping it up, and this has a detrimental effect on your cell membranes because it will make them hyperpermeable and cause things that shouldn't go into the cell, such as this foreign genetic material, to very easily pass through and be uptaken by the cell. It's called electroporation.
mRNA. Electroporation.
Yeah.
Goes right in.
Yeah.
Right in.
So
What does the mRNA do when it gets in the cell? Tell everyone again.
It depends what it's coded to do. If we can believe what they're telling us, it will cause your cell to start producing spike proteins.
Non-stop.
There's other things in there too. That technology automatically or necessarily downregulates your production of interferon, which is the cell's defense, and makes you susceptible to a raft of other viruses or infectious agents.
Okay,
so the vaccine itself or the mRNA induces immune suppression at the cellular level.
I've not heard anyone else talk about interferon as being a casualty of these toxic vaccinations. Well, tell us more about interferon.
Well, interferon is the first line of defense when a cell realizes it's been infected by a virus. And once it knows it's been infected, then it upregulates its production of interferon to attempt to stop it. Now, a number of viruses have mechanisms in there that can disable that, and then they're able to infect the cell, and possibly there's other strategies a cell can use to defend itself. But interferon is the big one. And a deficiency of interferon, coincidentally, is one of the reasons some people are very susceptible to the coronavirus. But it's curious that these vaccines, particularly the mRNA vaccines, in order for them to be able to get your cell to produce a foreign protein, they have to have something in that mRNA that turns off the interferon.
Oh.
Or else it won't. You will have a highly inflammatory response, and the cell will commit apoptosis, and that'll be the end of it. You probably won't produce much foreign protein at all.
Mm-hmm.
So within that mRNA code that codes for the spike protein, there's also another code in there that downregulates your production of interferon. Now, that's going to make you susceptible to herpes viruses. It will activate, you know, your latent herpes viruses and whatever other viruses you may be also carrying. There's plenty of retroviruses out there that are infecting people latently.
And they're not even aware of it. They're just, the viruses are just there.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, we live with many viruses. We, you know, coexist. I wouldn't say symbiotically, but, you know, they don't cause us a problem as long as we have a healthy immune system. But these vaccines are just decimating your natural equilibrium.
Right.
with your microbiome, your virome, and you just, yeah, your entire state of health is just undermined when these toxins are injected in this manner.
You mentioned URA-3665. Anything new on that? We don't know what it is yet, apparently. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this is, we don't know what it is. It's something that is in the vaccine. It is a component in the vaccines. And now, I don't know that it's, if it's present in all of them or just some of them. But this substance, whatever it is, has been confirmed to accumulate to toxic levels in the unvaxxed. Be nice to know what
it is. Accumulate to toxic levels in the unvaxxed.
Yeah, so this was described in two preprints. And preprints are studies that have yet to be peer-reviewed and formally published.
Right.
But the research has been done. It just needs to be reviewed and critiqued. But mysteriously, we can't even read the preprints now because they've been deleted, taken away,
yeah.
Suppressed.
Yeah. Well, thanks to you, we've got the copies of them, and they're up.
Well, the front page, anyway.
The front page shows the authors and the title, so we know there was a paper. It's gone.
Two papers.
We have that much. Two papers. We have that. So we've got something. All right, let me go back and read a little bit more. We're trying to focus, I think, personally, the bystander effect, the innocent bystander effect, is an enormously important issue. And I think it needs, and it was talked about in the beginning by the media, medics, and so forth. This is something we still haven't been able to unravel, but it is happening. I think it is dose-dependent. If you're around someone who has just been vaxxed a week or so earlier, they're probably throwing off a hell of a lot of spike proteins and other things. And if you're around that person for an hour, you might get spiked. You might start feeling lousy. Huh?
Yeah, yeah. I remember the account of the girl that was driving her mother or neighbor, two people that had recently been vaxxed, across town for 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And she came back and was ill for days.
15 minutes in a car. If you're in an office all day with people who have been vaxxed, I hope you'll take the supplements that we all know about now that we should take. I'll try and mention them here before the program is over. But you need to take care of yourself. I think it is dose dependent. Is it? What do you think? Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, definitely. You know, transient exposures, you're probably okay, but, you know, if it's somebody that's recently vaxxed, I mean, they will start producing spike protein, which is detectable in their blood within a day, copious amounts. Now, is it coming through the pores, the breath, all that? Possibly.
That
something's
quickly,
coming
though.
Out of them.
First day. Yeah, that's for sure. Okay, so remember that URA-3665. We don't know what it is yet, but we're on it. We're watching it. All right, here's another. This is actually a continuation of what I read earlier. I am so sorry this is happening to you, but I want to thank you for putting the information out there. Hopefully it will help other people. I'm to the point where I want to put a sign on me that says, if you had the jab, stay away from me, please. Yes, writes another person, I never shared anything on Facebook before I realized how Fauci and his co-conspirators have fooled the masses and harming people and are harming people with synthetic genetic manipulation. It's harming so many of us. My cousin just lost her husband after he got the vaccine. He died from a stroke. People say it's not caused by the vaccine. She is in a state of shock. Her husband was completely healthy, and this was completely unexpected. I'm brokenhearted for her. So there's another one. And this goes back to the microclot thing. The spike protein, apparently, among other things, is very talented at going inside your circulatory system, be it a capillary, a vein, or an artery, and linking up with the endothelial cells that form the inside wall of that blood vessel, that blood carrier, and causing damage and destruction, which leads to a rough surface which causes the blood cells, platelets, red cells, white cells, whatever, to start to back up, forming a clot, a blockage, especially so in capillaries. These little microclots will build up and become bigger and bigger, and more areas can be impacted. And we know now that the spike protein goes right into the brain and can begin to set up microclots in the brain, which will actually cause, well, what happens to the cells after a clot is formed? What happens to the cells in the immediate area?
No, they die. They're deprived of oxygen and they die.
So this is very much akin to the effect of a mad cow prion, as it were. It begins to, well, that's a different process, but it destroys a small part of the brain. And over again, these microclots will begin to build up a lot of damage in the brain, I would suggest. I'm not a doctor. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, between the inflammation and the these protein deposits and the clotting, it's a disaster.
Remember, they've been setting us up for over 10, 12 years now with zombie, zombie, zombie.
Yeah.
And if you have someone who has mad cow, Alzheimer's, maybe triggered by this, maybe it's microclots that cause the brain to, over time, and we don't know how much time, to become less than vibrant and vital. It's actually dying. And so your brain function is beginning to fade. It's headed toward failure. And that could lead toward a zombification, if you will, of an otherwise formerly, normally healthy brain and person.
Yep.
Okay. I've got a few more here. I'm going to read a couple more here. We call these bystander effects. I never had this blank shot, and now I know I am wearing... this is bad. I never had the shot, and I got to read this carefully. I never had the shot, and now I am wearing a heart monitor. I strongly believe it had something to do with the shedding of the spike proteins from others. I was perfectly healthy before I went back to work and society, and obviously was surrounded by people who have been vaxxed. And the answer came back, yeah, a few of my friends have not had the shot, but recently extremely weird illnesses came out of nowhere. One keeps going into anaphylactic shock in his sleep. No known allergies. Another in his 30s began having seizures, just got out of the hospital, no idea why. Someone else wrote, it's the spike proteins. I was healthy 2 weeks ago, and now I am having heart and breathing issues. Someone else writes, I also have felt weird fuzzy-headedness, dizziness, lacking in energy since I did a 2-hour flight on a plane, probably full of people who were shedding on board. What about flying now, Erica?
I think it's risky. I mean, you're putting yourself in a confined space with, I know these planes are flying chock-a-block full. They're, you know, if it's in a half-empty plane, they're canceling the flight. So they will wait until that plane is full. And you can bet the majority of people are probably vaxxed, at least half of them.
Oh, yeah.
And putting yourself in that situation, I think, is just risky. You know, you've got other stressors. I mean, the flying all by itself, you're exposed to cosmic radiation, you're exposed to EMF radiation. It's stressful. So your body is already in a susceptible state, and if there's something, some other kind of toxin or environmental insult, that you're going to be very susceptible to whatever it is.
Oh, and we shouldn't forget that inside the plane, 4G now, soon to be 5G, collected,
yeah,
and then broadcast throughout the entire cabin of the aircraft. So
yep,
you're going to get bathed in 5G.
Yep.
Flying. All right. Yeah. All right. Hold on a minute, and we'll be right back with Erica Kahn. Continue reading some of these. We got a couple more videos for you. I think you're going to find it to be fascinating, if not shocking. So stay tuned. Much more just ahead.